Welcome to Focus on the Community, a weekly program that focuses on issues and events in our community.
Well, hello and happy weekend, and welcome to another edition of Focus on Community. I'm Frank Rush. Good to have you along today. If you miss any part of today's conversation on the air, don't forget you can always find it as a podcast anytime you'd like on our website. You can either stream it or download it there. Our guest today is Glenna Cheeseman, who's the director of CASA here in Vigo County. Glenna, how you doing?
I am doing wonderful. Thank you, and good morning.
Now, the thing we wanted to mention to folks is that even though I said, you are the director of the Vigo County CASA, that doesn't mean that, well, first of all, you know a lot about CASA in general, and there are CASAs for each of the individual counties in the area. I mean, not every county has one, but almost all of them do, right?
I think we are at, of the 92 counties, I think they're at either at 88 or 89 counties now that have a CASA program or an umbrella program that covers several counties.
And basically, you guys kind of work the same way, right?
Yes, we all work within the network. We all have our standard practices and everything that we do per national regulations and per state regulations.
So what is CASA?
We are court-appointed special advocates, and we advocate for the children, abused and neglected children, who are going through the juvenile court system with an open Department of Child Services cases that's before the court. So we get appointed to all CHINS cases that come through Vigo County, and we appoint an advocate to every one of those cases, and we advocate for the best interest of the children for a safe, permanent, loving home.
Now, when people hear, you know, it's in the juvenile system, okay, are we talking kids that are charged with crimes? Or are we talking with kids?
No.
I mean, how does this work? Because there's a differentiation there that people need to understand.
The children that we are dealing with are going through the juvenile court system to no fault of their own. It is because their parents have an open case through the Department of Child Services, which is, you know, it used to be called, it's called DCS, but it's been called, you know, several things throughout the years, but it's the Department of Child Services, meaning that there's been an allegation of neglect and abuse going on, and that's how these cases get brought into court.
When you say you're the advocate for the child, you're not necessarily their legal representation, are you, or are you?
We are their voice in court. So anything that we need to do, we follow the court, make recommendations to the court to what's going on with the service providers, what's going on in placement, what's going on with the parents. Our focus is on the child and what the child's needs are. It's making sure that they have services they need. Maybe they need tutoring services, or, you know, when we make recommendations for the best interest of the child to the court.
So okay, I guess I'm trying to get my head wrapped around this, and I know everybody else is too. So when you're, you know, making recommendations for the child, you said, like, maybe they need tutoring services or what. I mean, do you help recommend whether or not they should even stay in the home?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and so what do you do to come to these determinations?
Through investigation, working with service providers, working with the Department of Child Services, parents, placements, we have to look at all that. We investigate the entire case file, case histories, you know, with service providers, therapists, we investigate everything. And from everything that we gather, and then with speaking with the children, you know, we make that determination and that recommendation to the judge based upon all those criteria with working with everyone. But our focus is solely on the child.
So how do you do that? I mean, obviously you talk to the child, but how do you do that? Do you get them apart separate from the home life and interview them? Or?
We see them at home. We see them at school. We see them at daycare. We see them in placement if they're in foster care, if they're in a location, you know, we go wherever they're at and we see them.
Okay.
And we talk with them. And then we also talk with all the service providers, and we attend meetings. We do visits. We attend visits to see how things are going on with the visits. We see them at school. We've even attended, you know, extracurricular activities with the kiddos just to see how they're, you know, working in the community and how they're doing at school. And sometimes it's, you know, visiting them at church or wherever. We see them in their environment.
And what are you looking for?
Looking for happiness and seeing if there's any problems or things that needs to be addressed or concerns. We're looking at how they're adapting and how they're progressing and seeing, you know, everything that's going on. We're looking at every aspect of their life.
I'm assuming that in your time with CASA and even some of the folks that work with you and for you, you guys see some stuff that's not too pleasant.
We do. We do see a lot of the dark side, but we also see the good too. And, you know, we have victories as well. And sometimes the situation could be that children are reunited with the parents, and then sometimes the children get adopted. And, you know, there are good and bad in everything that we do. We just have to make sure that we keep our focus on the child and advocate for the best interest for the child. And it can be difficult, so we try to make sure that, you know, we are in constant communication with our volunteers and our staff and meeting with them on a weekly basis, you know, so that they too can be, you know, triaging themselves through the cases to deal with everything that they're seeing and the crisis that's going on.
So how are you seeing when you get assigned a case like that? I mean, I would imagine, and I'm guessing, that parents might see you as a threat.
Can happen, but that also has to go into how we present ourselves, and we have to be very informative and explain to them that we are not a part of any other service agency. We are a part of the court, and that we are there to investigate and advocate on the best interest of the child. So it's just all about how we present ourselves with them and making sure that we build that rapport with everyone involved, not just the families, but all the service providers, the children, everyone that we work with.
Obviously, the kids, if you see them, they're traumatized by some happenstance that's going on at home. That's why they're involved in this. How hard is it for you to get the kids to kind of trust you? Because I imagine even to them, you seem like this, kind of ominous person who just showed up and they don't know who you are. I mean, getting them to trust you is a problem, I would imagine.
Our volunteers are very well trained. They go through extensive training when they become a volunteer, and then we continue education. The state requires that they could do an additional 12 hours of continuing education a year, but our volunteers and staff average right now about 70 to 80 hours additional training every year because they really are always looking for ways to build a rapport, to make sure that they're, investigating and representing the children the best they possibly can in court. So we go through a lot of training on how to work with children, how to address it. We know going into it we're another person that's coming at them. So we go through a lot of training so that we know how to work with them. Sometimes that's why we meet with them at school, because it's not as scary. So it's in their own world. It's on their terms. So we work with them because we know that, we're a stranger. So we've got to build that rapport with the child. And sometimes it can take a little bit. Sometimes it's immediate.
So you talk about the training you guys go through, though. You're not attorneys.
Nope.
And from what I understand, anyway, just about anybody who is concerned about the well-being of children can volunteer to help you guys. So they're not all counselors, they're not all therapists, they're not all child counselors. I mean, so what does it take to work for CASA?
A person who wants to make a difference and be an impact, basically. You just have to pass a clean background check. That is through the state, through federal background checks, fingerprints checks, plus a DCS check. And you just have to be 21, basically, to do this and want to make a difference in the child's life. We have doctors, we have attorneys, we have retired teachers, we have retired police officer, military. We have homemakers, we have college students. From every walk of life, we have them. And it's an amazing, I work with an amazing group of volunteers who make me, just working with these individuals every day and my staff is truly humbling because they do amazing things every day. And to be a CASA volunteer, all you want to do is to want to make a change, is to make an impact in a child's life. That's really all you need to know.
How hard is it on the person who volunteers to be a volunteer? Because, like you said, you're there for a reason, and it probably didn't start out good. That's why you're involved to begin with, and it could be any number of things. How hard is it on the volunteer to emotionally deal with what they need to do to help the kids?
Well, everything that we do is confidential, so it's not like you can go home and talk to your spouse about everything that you're doing. So that is why we make sure that we have every parameter and measure in our program available. We have volunteer coordinators that they can talk to. We have mentoring programs that they can talk to other volunteers about what they're feeling in the staff. I have a staff of four supervisors, and I have two volunteer coordinators that work with the staff hand in hand at all times so that they have that outlet, so that when they're dealing with something that's really, so that they have the support. So that going through this, because we are dealing with some pretty serious things, and it's sometimes it's a shock to a person to just not even understand, the severity that is there. So we make sure that we have everything to be in there, fully supportive to our volunteers, to make sure that they have every access, every mean, to help them through this process, because we know coming inside they're going to feel overwhelmed, they're going to feel anxious, they're going to be nervous, they're going to be even scared at times, because they're this is something new, but we work with them every step of the way. We just don't have them come in, train, and send them out the door. We are with them every step of the way, supportive from our staff to our volunteers to everyone, making sure that they have someone there that's with them.
I would imagine that it probably is a shock to the system for anybody that volunteers when they realize, like you said, some of the seriousness of the cases and things that you have to deal with. But then again, by the same token, that's why you're there.
Well, I can tell you that a lot of the surprise is we will have people who will want to volunteer. It's not necessarily the case. It's that they get surprised at how close it is to them, you know, in their neighborhoods, or how severe this is a problem. You know, they didn't really kind of capture it in their brain or be able to wrap their head around how big of a problem this is in our community. So then when they come in and they start learning and they start seeing and they see all the cases that we do and all the children that we serve, that's when it kind of they kind of get that shock. But we're here to help them through that.
So let's break it down and go through some numbers. You talk about folks are a little bit shocked and surprised at how many cases there are. So how many cases are there on an annual basis for you guys? How many volunteer counselors do you have? How many do you need? Let's go through just the kind of impact you guys make.
Okay, so right now we have a staff, and when I took over as director in 2017, we had 8 staff members. We now have 18. We have 5-6 full-time staff, and then everyone else is part-time. We have 47 active assigned volunteers currently right now. We are in desperate need of volunteers. COVID hit us really, really hard. We lost about 30 volunteers over the last year and a half due to just the COVID and health issues and things like that, taking care of family members and stuff. So we took a really hit there. I can tell you that currently for the year of 2021, with our program right now, we have had assigned active cases in our program of 1,237 children. We have currently right now an active 875 open cases. So we've had 362 cases close out this year, but we active right now, as of today, we have 875 open cases.
And you usually have a waiting list of cases that need to be assigned to somebody, but because of the fact that you're short on volunteers, some of those cases just kind of have to sit and wait.
Well, as of March 1st of this year, we were able to start a pilot program through the state to where we can start accessing staff CASAs to help cover those cases. They work in a little different capacity as a CASA, but we do have a CASA assigned to every case right now. Where we need our volunteers is that our caseloads are so high for our staff, we need volunteers to come in and lower the caseloads that our staff has.
So do the math for me. I mean, you got 875 open cases, you got, what, 18 staff, so that works out to a pretty ridiculous number per person now, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, we have 47 actively signed volunteers that have a case, and then the remaining cases are divided among our staff. We have an intake team, we have a child monitor team, and then we have a staff CASA team, and those remaining cases are divided amongst all of those staff members. So we are always working to get those cases off onto a volunteer, because they work them as a limited capacity, but we have eyes on the child every single month.
So what if somebody wants to volunteer, what can they expect? I mean, when they come in, they call you and they go, Glenna, I want to volunteer. And you're like, all right. So before they ever get to see a kid, I'm assuming they got to go through training, evaluation, that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
And then what, a hand-holding session as they get started, or how's that work?
The process starts with they either go online and fill out an application, or they can come in and start talking with Jan, who is our recruiter, trainer, and recruiter and trainer. They would go through an in-person interview with them, talk about different things that's going on to see if it's actually even a fit for them. So before anything else starts, we've got questions and some assessments and things that they can go to find out if this is really what they want to do. We kind of tell them what's happening, what's expected of them. Then once they go through that process, then they start the background checks. They get fingerprinted, they do a DCS background check, they do a state and a federal background check. Once we get through all that, then we set them into our training, which is part of it's done online at their convenience, and then part of it's done in class. Once we get through all of that, all of those training, which is about, if average is out about 45 hours of onset training, that's initial training. We do a little bit more because we are a pretty large program, so we have a lot of things that we want to make sure that we cover with them. And then once that's done, we get them sworn in, and then they start meeting with their volunteer coordinator. They meet with them, and then they go through cases, and they decide which case they want to take. And then once we do that, they have their volunteer coordinator, and then we also assign them with a mentor coming in so that they have someone there that's also additional support on top of the volunteer coordinator that they will be working with to help them through their cases as they move forward.
Okay, and of course, they will not only go meet with the child and maybe the parents, that kind of stuff, they will have to go to court.
Yes. They will be fine. They file a report about every 6 to 9 months. They will file a report, which we will help them through that process. We do other reports intermittently. They're informational reports. But that's only if something is going on that the court needs to be made aware of at that moment. And those aren't that frequent. That happens sometimes, but not all the time. But normally they usually do a report every 3 months, every 6 months, and 9 months. And then they will go and testify. If there's a situation where they can't, we do have alternatives to for them to be able to testify virtually.
So what can a person who's thinking about volunteering, what can they expect time commitments-wise? I mean, it's a volunteer position, so you're kind of giving of your own free will here. It's not like you're getting a high-paid job. But what can you expect to be required to do your job and do it well?
We have a system that we have to use that have to put all of our contact logs and stuff in. And on average, to be quite honest, even in cases that are kind of high end, that have a lot of activity going on in them, it's usually about 12 hours a month is what they are putting in. They're doing their visits. They're logging all their contacts. Maybe they have to write a report. Maybe they're meeting with their volunteer coordinator. And it's usually on average about 12 hours a month. We've had some cases that are doing very well. And it's 5 to 6 hours a month of time that they're actually committing to the case. And then some of them are a little bit more. We do have some that are very severe, or there's a lot going on in the cases. Maybe there is a termination of parental rights coming up, so there's a lot of prepping for court, going over documents and things that take a little bit more time that you need to do. But on average, it's about 12 hours a month that you would be investing into being a volunteer.
Yeah, and that's not bad at all, especially when you consider that the kids do need you. So that's,
yes.
You know.
And you're required to visit the child a minimum of once a month. But I can tell you our volunteers, I've got one volunteer that goes every week, you know. I mean, so it's at your leisure of how often you want to go. But you just have to make sure that you spend time with that child at least at a minimum of one time a month.
And also people should know, too, there is a difference. This isn't, and don't get me wrong, I'm not criticizing anybody, but this is not a big brother, big sister type of visit.
No, I mean, when our volunteers go, they may help with homework, they may just sit and play a game, maybe they're having lunch, they're talking with them at school. Those are how the visits are. They're not like, you know, bombarding them with 1,000 questions, kind of like an interrogation type thing. That's not how that goes. They are building a rapport with these children, and they're building, you know, one of the things with the CASA is that we are the constant. We do have sometimes when, depending on, you know, if there's a staff CASA on it, the CASA may change a couple times, but above and beyond that, we are the constant. The kid can rely on us being there, and it's a unique experience to visit with these kids, to talk with them, and to just get to know them, and that's what they're doing. They're getting to know them, and that's a wonderful thing to do.
Glenna Cheeseman with Wabash Valley Vigo County CASA is our guest today. And Glenna, I know that if folks in Vigo County, obviously, they want to get involved in this, they can get a hold of you. But even if folks are listening on some of our outlying areas, they can still call you and you can get them in touch with the organizations in their counties, right?
Absolutely. All of the organizations around us, Clay County, Vermilion Park, all of those, they all are in need of volunteers. And if you don't know how to reach them and you want to know about the program, you can always call us, and I'll definitely get your number sent over to the appropriate program so that they're aware. We need volunteers here in Vigo County, as well as everybody across the state needs volunteers.
And I know that you've got a website as well as a number to call too, right?
Yes. VigoCountyCASA.net. And if you're not necessarily looking to be an advocate but would like to help support the program, there's also other ways you can be a part of helping make a difference in a child's life with our program.
All right. Glenna Cheeseman is the director of Vigo County CASA. Thanks for spending some time with us today. I hope we get lots of volunteers that will call you. And, of course, do you have any specific time for the classes to start, or is it just whenever they get a hold of you and they send individual?
Actually, we usually, Jan, who is our trainer, usually holds a training class the third week of every month. But we will be holding one more training class for this year, which is in November. But I think that falls on Thanksgiving, so I think that date is a little changed. But then in December, we don't hold a training class because we have so much going on with Whoville coming up and everything, so it's just kind of a crazy month. So then our next standing training would be in January.
Whoville, what's that? Real quick, explain it to us.
Christmas in Whoville. We celebrate uniqueness of every child. So Christmas in Whoville is our opportunity to provide Christmas gifts to the children of our program. Last year, we were able to provide over 973 presents to the children that we served last year. So we celebrate Whoville because the Christmas tree, you know, the Grinch who stole Christmas, and the community trees, they celebrate everyone's uniqueness. So that's why we adapted it to our program, so that we could adapt to celebrating everyone's uniqueness. And we provide, this year it is the Snowflake Express. COVID is still knocking at our door, so that we have to rechange how we're doing it. So it's a drive-through event, so we're calling it the Christmas in Whoville Snowflake Express, so that the children will be able to come through, see all of our characters and our decorations, and still get a surprise from the Grinch.
Glenna Cheeseman with Vigo County CASA. Thank you for being with us again. Their website is vigocountycasa.net. If you're in Vigo County, get a hold of Glenna or anybody there at the office. They'll be glad to help you out. If you're in one of the outlying areas, you can also go and contact Vigo County CASA, and they will get you in contact with the folks in your area. That's it for this week's show. We've always got a repeat for you on our website. That's where it's all posted as a podcast, and we will see you next week.
To be considered as a guest on Focus on the Community, contact us by calling 812-420-2518 or send an email to frush@dlcmediainc.com. Be sure and tune in again next week at the same time as we focus on the community.